Very good to be with you. My family's in St. Louis, seeing their family, my in-laws, and so they're not with me, but always love coming back to Sunset. At Brookline, we're going through a series, and I want to share with you what I already shared with them today. I didn't pick it because you needed to hear this, but we're going to talk tonight about sharing our faith, And it is possible, as I embark on this lesson that we would call evangelism maybe, that there is already, just having said that word, a feeling of regret and guilt washing over the audience. The reason I can say that or guess that is because I've been where you are. The preacher, teacher, guest speaker stands up and begins speaking about sharing our faith, being more evangelistic, and you immediately start feeling badly if you're in my place because I don't do what I know I should. Do you feel that? I don't know who John Speed is, but I found an article on the internet. He addresses the subject, and he acknowledges the guilt that Christians feel when you talk about evangelism. He writes that when he hears a man stand up to preach or to teach, starts talking about evangelism, he likes to look around the room and study people's faces. And as he starts speaking about evangelism, he says the same thing happens in the room of Christians. The same reaction to almost to a person, to every listener, goes like this. Almost without exception, the listener reacts in much the same way. They hang their heads. Their brows are knit in concern. Sometimes there's tears, sometimes anger, but almost always a look of resolve on their face. They must be thinking, I will do better. Chances are these resolutions are left undone because the same cycle is repeated the next time somebody comes and speaks about evangelism. Roger Steer wrote a book about J. Hudson Taylor. I don't know if you know who that is. Famous British missionary to China. Died in 1905. But he speaks about this incident that happened with Taylor. Taylor was on his way to Ningbo on this junk, which is a sailing vessel common to China. And the crew's on there, a young man, a Chinese man they'd named Peter, who's not yet a Christian. And the boat's sailing up the canal that morning. Taylor's in his cabin getting some brochures, tracts, books ready to distribute very soon. And Peter's on the deck milling around. He'd been warned several times about this silly habit he had of clambering across the narrow ledge where the cabin was, moving from one end of the boat to the other, which is dangerous. And on this day, from his cabin, Taylor heard a cry and a splash, and he rushed onto the deck, and Peter had fallen headfirst into the canal, and since the water was low, he got stuck in the deep sludge somewhere under the water. And the crew is helpless. The wind is carrying the boat onward. Taylor quickly lowers the sails by himself, jumps into the water, gets to the point where he thinks Peter is, starts thrashing about in a frantic search for the man under the water, and then sees his fishing boat with drag nets and a hook and some hooks. And he shouts, come, come and drag this spot. A man is drowning. And those on boat called back, it's not convenient. Don't talk about convenience, he said. A man is drowning, I tell you. Their response, we're busy fishing. We can't come. Never mind your fishing. I'll give you money, a many days' wages. Come, come at once. How much money will you give us? Taylor couldn't believe his ears. We can't discuss that. Come quickly. It's going to be too late. I'll give you $5, which in that time and in that place, it would have been a lot more than we think of that. We won't drag for that, they shouted. Give us $20 and we'll drag. I haven't got that much. Come quickly, I'll give you all I have. How much is that? I don't know exactly, about $14, I think. At last, even slowly, they bring their boat over there. They let down the net. In less than a minute, they found the body. They brought up Peter's lifeless body, and Taylor starts CPR, works a while trying to revive him, and the whole time the crew is complaining that they're not getting paid immediately. He couldn't do it. He couldn't win him back. Peter was gone. He was dead, and it's tragic, and Taylor goes on to think of a greater significance, the realization that Christians too often fail to do something to save those who are dying around them. Do you feel the guilt yet? Back to Speed's comments, he'll go on to say that guilt is what Christians should feel. Of course we feel guilty. His words. The command to evangelize has been given throughout the gospel. When believers refuse to obey this command, they break the first command. They don't love God. The proof is they don't obey. And they don't love their neighbors enough to share the gospel with them. And their conscience bears witness that they are guilty. You know, the truth is we all could do a better job, including this preacher speaking tonight. You want to talk about evangelism? I feel guilty too. And maybe I should just say it right now. Let's lay it out there and then all of us go home right now and feel guilt-ridden for the rest of the night and all week long till we come back to another lesson like this. But I don't find that very effective, do you? I'm not motivated by very well or very long with guilt. So while we hear a story like that, which was true, and hear those comments, which that man really believes, let's acknowledge the truth. And let's say it. There have been times, maybe too many times, when the church as a whole, and Christians in particular, have stood around and met together and had lots of seminars, and we talked and we haggled and we argued and we fought over all kinds of things that didn't really matter when people all around us are dying in sin. And somebody could have done something. Somebody should have said something. Anybody could have done anything to do something, right? But is speed right? If you haven't spoken enough or done enough, is it because you don't love God? Can I lay it on you and say you don't love your neighbors and you ought to feel guilty? Could I give a different approach instead of making us all feel guilty because we could do better, and that is the truth, we could do better? Could I just encourage you to think about some things tonight? So we don't all walk out of here with our heads low, but thinking we can do something. So instead of making you feel worse, could I encourage you just to think differently about yourself and all of this? First of all, let me say this. I have had the privilege, as some have, of immersing people into Christ, and it is great. I get all wet, even with waders on, and I get out there, and there's a feeling that is just incredible to have done that. And some of you have done that. You've actually put somebody under the water, and it is a thrill to do that. Really, it is. But some of you haven't done that, and many of you maybe haven't done that, and you don't have to. Did you know you don't have to? You know Jesus didn't baptize anybody? I mean, John says that. His disciples did. He didn't. And after he's gone back to the Father, at least the young church in Corinth is really wrestling with some things and dividing over who they should follow. And Paul is glad he didn't baptize anybody. I mean, he does name a couple. He says at the beginning of what we call 1 Corinthians, I am thankful I didn't baptize any of you, except Crispus and Gaius, and then kind of in parentheses, oh, I also baptized the household of Stephanus. But I don't know if is there anybody else that can remember. And I don't think his memory's bad. I think he's just downplaying his role. But he knows the truth, and that is the most important point, is not who did the baptizing. It's a thrill, honestly. But even if you do that, you are not the point of that. Somebody needs to do that, but maybe you don't need to. I've enjoyed also the honor, the privilege of opening a Bible with some folks and studying with them and talking to them about Jesus. There isn't much that comes closer to that. I love that. Sharing the good news is a pleasure, and not everybody has sat with a couple or a person or a family with a Bible open and gone through all these scriptures to tell them some things. Somebody needs to do that, but maybe you haven't done that, and that may be okay too. Here's the point. I sometimes get into the process late in the game because I'm a preacher, and sometimes people say, hey, have you met so-and-so, and others who are ministers or others who love to do this get to do this too, but I kind of get to close the deal, so to speak, late in the game, but I'm not the one who brought him to that moment. All I do is just tell him a few things or study a few scriptures or say, would you like to be baptized? So if preachers stand up and tell you that you ought to be preaching just like them, or a teacher says you ought to be teaching just like them, give them some grace, but they may not be right. Even James says not all of you should be teachers, my brothers. Not everybody should be a preacher. Not everybody should be a teacher. Not everybody's going to do everything. In fact, Ephesians, Paul's saying, God made some of you evangelists, some prophets, some pastors, some teachers. And notice the different roles for different people so everybody can work together and build up the church and be mature. And maybe it's the same when getting people to come to good news so that they accept Jesus Christ and are saved. And we go to the Great Commission and we should learn from that and we should do that. But we immediately jump to who's preaching? And who's baptizing? But there is a making disciples that happens for a long time. You know how long it takes to make a disciple? I don't know that I can give you a number because just looking at me, I've got 48 years behind me. 48 years, and God is still working on me, making me what He wants me to be. And do you know how many people have worked on me? to get me to this point? Way back when I was very, very small. And all the way along the way, some grandparents and parents and family and friends and preachers and Sunday school teachers and wise old men and wonderful old women and young people. And it's been an incredible journey, but 48 years and God is still making a disciple of me. We're all gifted in different ways to make sure people come to know Jesus and are saved. And that is our goal, to make sure everybody comes to know Jesus and is saved. That is at least God's goal. But maybe we've downplayed what may contribute to the disciple-making process. Maybe we've downplayed what ought to be said more often. I like what Mark Love wrote. Talked about a woman that came to their church. Her name was Ivy, and she visited our congregation, he writes. For the first time that Sunday before Christmas, she came late and attempted to leave early. Before she got to the door, however, I stopped her, introduced myself, asked her if she had a place to spend Christmas. She burst into tears and ran out, and I thought that's the last we've seen of Ivy. But she came back to the next week, and she came back the next week and the next week. Each time she came late and left early. One week I stopped her, asked if we could talk about some things, and we did. We started meeting weekly for a year. Ivy'd moved to Portland for romance, recently divorced and alone in the world. She'd hoped for a new relationship that it would give her meaning. She arrived in Portland, however, and found out that the romantic doors had closed. So she came to church, grasping for something, anything to give life new meaning. In our meetings, we talked about the gospel and scripture, and we studied and heard her background, a little bit of faith, discussed virtually everything I could think of. I threw everything at her, and after a while, figured out I didn't know what else to tell her. In the meantime, however, here's the point, however, she became regularly part of our community. Though she didn't believe yet, she became an active part of our congregation. Jenny befriended her. Bill worked on her Jeep with her. She accompanied the youth group downtown to feed the homeless. She came to our work day in her coveralls and helped us take care of the grounds. And he says more, but finally gets to the place where he says, and one day she said, I want to be baptized. And he baptized her. And he says a few things he learned from that, but the last one, my brilliant Bible studies had only limited appeal. Instead, she came to believe in God only after a long sojourn with His people. So let's just say somebody walks in the doors at sunset. Maybe the preacher or an elder gets a hold of them and has a study with them, and weeks go by and weeks go by, and at some point they are immersed into Christ right here and you watch them. But do you know how many people got them to that point? Who first invited them to church? Who first told them Christians are decent people? Who first said, you know, the church might have something to offer? Who put in a good word for Jesus, as Milton Jones likes to say? Who walked in that door or out that door as they walked in just to shake their hand? Who handed them a bulletin? Who said hello? Who shook their hand, gave them a side hug? Who patted them on the back? Who said, I'm really glad you're here? Who noticed they were a guest, a visitor, and walked across the hall or walked across the auditorium just to speak to them? Who made them feel welcome? Who said, come sit by me? Who afterwards said, here's a good word for you, or God bless you, or thanks for coming, or you want to go to lunch? Who taught their child just down the hall or downstairs? Who showed them where the bathroom was? Who smiled and waved all the way across the room? Who spoke words of hope? Who gave God the credit? Who told them what great things God is doing in the lives of the people here? Who's done all that? You know who's done all that? Not the preacher. You. Lots of you. And maybe they come back, and maybe they keep coming back. Maybe finally, someday, somebody gets the honor of baptizing them into Christ. But you know who did all that? Lots of folks. And everybody is involved in that process in evangelism. So maybe you're not sure where you fit into all of those things. Maybe you say, I don't speak well. I don't know how to hold a Bible study. I've never baptized anybody. I think that's okay. But you got to find your place. Find where you're great at doing something that is part of that long process of bringing somebody all the way till they know Jesus Christ and are saved. And maybe it's as simple as meeting somebody at the door. And if you don't know if you can do that, talk to somebody who's good at that, because there's people in this church who are very good at that. And if all you can do is call somebody on the phone or go visit somebody at the hospital or send a card to somebody, there's some really good people who already know how to do that. You join them in that. Find somebody who loves to study the Bible and say, I want to introduce you to my friend. Invite somebody to church, because there's some people here who love to invite people here. So we ought to speak fearlessly as Paul prayed we should, as he wanted to. We all ought to fulfill the great commandment, but maybe we ought to broaden our understanding of what that means. Instead of saying, I should be a preacher, or I should be studying the Bible with somebody, how about let's start looking at some more insignificant places in the Bible where somebody, all they did was just point. They just opened their mouth and said something. There's that little servant girl sharing with the wife of the commander of the army of Aram, and just says, there's a prophet I know who might be able to heal, and that's all she does. A captive among the foreign people, but she's an Israelite and she knows the Lord. She must have known the stories and knows the prophet enough to say, have him go talk to the prophet. That's 2 Kings. A reluctant prophet who stinks at his job. Jonah, he's a terrible evangelist. He's a stinky prophet. But God gets his way and the city is saved even though he doesn't care. A Samaritan woman who has 5 husbands before that time. Now she's with somebody who's not even her husband. You can imagine the soiled reputation if what we think is true. What kind of a witness is that? Who wants to hear that story? She can't wait to get back to town and she tells everybody about the guy she's met who's told her everything she's ever done. John 5. A man who learns about Jesus probably knows very little, but he knows enough to say this is the guy. And he goes back to his brother and says, we found him, the one the prophets talked about, the one Moses wrote about, Jesus of Nazareth, come and see. A once possessed man who couldn't keep the demons out and couldn't keep the chains off and couldn't keep his clothes on. Living among the tombs, beside himself, nuts in some ways, what some might say, crazy, dangerous, hopeless and helpless until Jesus meets him, and as he's healed, he just wants to get in the boat. Just let me get in the boat. I just want to go with you. And Jesus said, no, just go back and open your mouth and tell everybody what God has done for you. There's so many things that so many can do to help somebody come to know who the Lord is. And the Lord is in charge of every one of those steps. Let's see, what's it say? Some plant and some water, but God gives the increase. Well, I'm no preacher. Good. I'm not an elder. That's okay. I don't know how to study the Bible with somebody. It's all right. God knows what He's doing, and He's still very good at it even today when He brings one person to one person and brings them together. Somebody who needs to hear and somebody who needs to speak. Somebody who needs some hope and somebody who's got some. An Ethiopian and a man named Philip. God today still brings two people together, and you might be one of those two. What are you willing to do? What would you be? See, Matthew 5, you know what you already are. You're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. Did you know that? He describes how wonderful these things are as long as they're useful. And here's the challenge. So let your light shine. Let your light shine. Even tomorrow. Tomorrow, let your light shine so people can look at you, how you live and how you think and how you treat people. And say, wow, that's incredible. And they give God credit for you. Because of you, they're giving God glory. Wouldn't that be something? So maybe you're not a preacher. Maybe you're not a teacher. Maybe you're not an effective communicator. Maybe you think, I got so little to say. What would I say to anybody? But could I tell you, God is preparing you to be salt and light in your little world. Where you live and where you work and where you shop, among your friends and among your family, in the neck of your own woods. You are an influencer for God right where you need to be if you would just let your light shine so people can see you live and then they could glorify God for it. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, they would come to know what you already know and be saved. Maybe we've made too big of a deal out of all this, a daunting task like we have to move to China and tell everybody. I can't move to China and tell everybody. Well, good, then stay right where you are and let your light shine. Don't psych yourself out to be evangelistic somehow. When I can't do that. Just look for an opportunity. Tomorrow, look for an opportunity. Simplify and say, God, show me the opportunity where I can just say something. Just say something like, God bless you. Or, boy, Jesus has done great things through me. Angelo would have never called himself a hero. I mean, why would he? He's 32 years old. He's a plumber from Fort Collins, Colorado, and didn't think that much of himself, I guess, until that day when he's in the water and the unthinkable happens and CBS told the story. He was spending the weekend in July, just this past year, at Windsor Lake with his family. And this this father of three is wading about in waist-deep water, and he feels something brush up against his leg. And he kicks it up behind him and turns around to see what that was, and what he sees is a tiny foot floating just beneath the surface. And it's connected to a little girl named Sitali, if that's how you pronounce it. She's just 3 years old, and she's under the water. And he saw her feet, and he said, I saw the bottom of her feet, and then right then at that moment, that became my child, and I reached in and I pulled her out like I would any of my babies. That little girl was just down the way a little bit in the same body of water. Her family was with her. They didn't see her. She didn't have a life preserver on, so she slipped under the water and out of sight and down by Angelo, and he just felt her under the water, and he reached in and grabbed her, and she's cold and lifeless, and he brings her up, and she's already turning blue, and he gets her to the shore. Two nurses, off-duty nurses, and he tried to revive her, and the little girl's rushed to the hospital, and she makes a full recovery. And you can get online and look at the pictures or the video when they meet 24 hours later, and the family's in tears as Angelo cries. They all cry. It's a great, great moment. And of course they're eternally grateful for the man that saved their daughter. Of course they are. They consider him a hero, and he just says, I was in the right place at the right time. But he said, I'm coming to the hospital today because I love her. She's a part of my family now. You know what he did? You know what incredible thing he did? He just reached down and pulled her up. Maybe that's similar to evangelism. I don't know. Maybe we don't think about lost people enough, people who are dying without Jesus, without hope, without salvation. Maybe we're derelict in our duties. Maybe we all ought to feel guilty and go home and feel more guilty. But what if we don't need more guilt? We just need to open our eyes a little more. Just pray for another opportunity tomorrow to be just a little bit of light in a really, really dark world. The angel told Philip, go down to the road, Jerusalem to Gaza. He goes there and meets a man reading Isaiah and talks to him about Jesus. And he baptizes him that day. That's a great story. An angel has never told me where to go. Maybe you're like me, or maybe you've heard an angel. But I have never heard an angel tell me where to go. But I am still convinced today that there are people searching for hope and meaning and salvation. They're just wanting to tell, to hear somebody tell them something that could help them. Somebody. And maybe we're a room of somebody's if we would just say something. There's a song sung by the Sidewalk Prophets called That Saved My Life. And here are the words. We've met half a dozen times. I know your name. I know you don't know mine, but I won't hold that against you. You come here every Friday night. I take your order and try to be polite. Hide what I've been going through. If you looked right in my eye, would you see the pain deep inside? Would you take the time to tell me what I need to hear? Tell me that I'm not forgotten. Show me there's a God who can be more than all I've ever wanted. Because right now I need a little hope. I need to know that I'm not alone. Maybe God is calling you tonight to tell me something that just might save my life. No guilt tonight. There are people tomorrow and the next day and the next day that we will brush up against. They will rub on our legs and rub on our shoulders. We'll see them at school. We'll see them at the office. We'll see them at the house. We'll see them across the street. We'll see them on the road. And they need to be rescued. I don't know if they know it. I don't know if they would like it. Even if you suggest it, they may hate us more than they already do. I don't know. But if the Bible is correct, and we believe it is, then those who do not know the Lord do not have hope. They need a Savior, and we know the Savior. You may not notice the server at the restaurant today, or the mechanic who will be under your car tomorrow, or the secretary, or the CEO, or the homeless guy with a sign. But if we would just open our eyes, it's possible that we would see somebody crying out, look in my eyes, listen, tell me something that just might save my life. And if we would see it and hear it and care enough to do something about it, the next question is, will we? And maybe evangelism is not so hard. Maybe it's not a daunting task. Maybe it's as simple as 1 Peter says it. Always be prepared just to give an answer to everybody who might ask you for the hope that is already within you. Just like in the Philip and the eunuch story, God's so good at bringing people together. Just trust Him to do that. Maybe you don't have to even work that hard to do that. Maybe you don't have to have a degree or study hard to do that. Just keep your eyes open, because Because we already have the hope of the glorious gospel that can save a life if we would just watch for the time to say something when the time is right. And Christians, you can go today, tomorrow, all this week, and just be good to people. Just let your light shine. Be ready to give an answer for the hope you have. Because we already within us have the good news that just might save someone's life. And it's possible somebody is among us who doesn't even know who Jesus is. And you don't have to come ask a preacher or an elder. You can ask anybody who sits around you. And they would be thrilled to tell you about the Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah who died and was buried and was raised again. And maybe you'd hear the story tonight. And maybe you'd say even before we're done, like the man in Acts 8, hey, here's water. What would keep me from being baptized? And we would love to do that. No more guilt. Not tonight. Let's go away not feeling terrible, just looking and praying for opportunities just to open our eyes and open our mouth. Because maybe somebody is screaming out tonight. God may be calling you to tell me something to save my life. If you need to come, you can do that. Let's stand and sing this song.